My guest today is filmmaker Phil Alaco, a feature film and commercial writer-director. His work has garnered over 60 awards and nominations, and he was one of the shortlisted directors picked by Steven Spielberg from a worldwide search of over 12,000 directors for his U.S. TV series On the Lot for Fox TV. Now, his feature film, The Truth About Lies, won 14 awards at festivals, including the Best of Fest at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. Now, his new feature film, 5 Pounds of Pressure, is a gripping action thriller. Adam, played by actor Luke Evans, is an ex-con back in his old neighborhood after serving a 16-year stretch for murder, walks a rocky path of forgiveness towards the son who grew up without him, while the bitter, volatile brother of the youth he killed looms in the background. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome writer, director, and even music composer of the new film, 5 Pounds of Pressure, Phil Alaco, to the show. Welcome, Phil.
Well, so nice to meet you, Ward, and so great to be with you, and so great to talk about the film. I'm excited.
I am too, because I loved this film. I mean, it's not your normal street smart drama. I mean, this one actually has heart. Where did the idea come from for 5 Pounds of Pressure?
Well, you know, when I started writing it, I wasn't even kind of thinking where it was going. You know, sometimes as writers, you play all sorts of tricks to get you to write something on that blank page, you know. And I started writing this over 15 years ago. And looking back on it, you know, I did grow up in a world like this with people like this who have done things like this on both sides of these extreme actions, you know. And I think, you know, somewhere in my head, I think it was cathartic to kind of write about it. And I think I've always struggled with having empathy or my anger, or whatever, for people who are on both sides of these very extreme things. They do very bad things, the characters in the film. And but I still like to, I like films that always kind of give me a view into what it means to be human in some way, different ways to look at ourselves, you know? So that's what I think I gravitate towards and try to write about.
This film is one of the best that I've seen in probably the last 6 months. And as I was sitting there watching it, this film was filled with a desire for redemption, forgiveness, the desire for acceptance, even identity. And I don't usually see some of these traits in a film as gritty as this one. But you really put a focus on the human element. Why was that so important?
Well, I kind of feel like that, you know, what makes us tick behind the stereotypical kind of ways we may interact in the world. I mean, there's a lot of things we have seen before that we see in this movie. And there are a lot of, I guess, you know, stereotypical things that they do. I think trying to get behind like why people are the way they are, and no one just grows up thinking I'm gonna murder someone one day, that's gonna be my legacy, or I'm gonna be a drug dealer. You know, it's all these little compromises that you make in your daily quest in a mundane everyday way, you know, when you're struggling to find your identity, struggling to survive, you know. We all make compromises on our own, you know, what we think is our higher self. And I think I liked looking at how the characters are navigating that while still trying to find out who they are, or like Adam, who is trying to redeem something that I don't even know if you can redeem it, right? I mean, that's a big question.
Yeah, I noticed that, because what I noticed was that each of the main characters have some sort of moral conscience, and you have some more than others. Adam, he paid his debt to society, but he wants to make things right. Then you have Lef, played by Alex Pettifer, had a moral conscience about turning down the opportunity to sell heroin, which I thought was in the beginning, I thought it was kind of funny, not funny, haha. But as the film moved on, you reveal that little backstory as to why. Then we have Mike, a wannabe tough guy who he's got his own story. And then, but instead of creating a street smart thug story, this film, as gritty as it is, there's a lot of feeling here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you feel that way when you watch it, because you know, when as a writer and as a director, one of the things I try to work, and I'm so blown away when I see directors who are able to do it. I'm just trying my best to get a fraction of what they're able to do, but to create an emotional response. You know, you have an intellectual response. I mean, I always think of it like I could tell you a joke that a comedian, famous comedian, made a whole room laugh. But just because I tell you that same information doesn't mean I'm going to make your body laugh, right? So getting that a physical response, there's a timing, there's an art to it. It goes beyond the intellectual information. And when you get to a film, it's the same way. You know, when you're trying to evoke an emotion, it's one thing to know, oh, I should feel something here. But we've all seen films where we don't feel when we're supposed to. And I think that's it's a really hard thing and something I'm fascinated with and still working on trying to get, you know.
Bill, but that's what I was trying to go for. You're brilliant. Okay? Because one of the scenes in this movie is probably one of my favorite scenes. And it's Adam and Jimmy in the park when Adam taught Jimmy how to draw. That was literally one of the most poignant moments in this film. I mean, how you created what I would call the unknown father-son interaction, because Jimmy didn't know right then.
Right. He doesn't know. And Adam, I think, wouldn't even want him to know because he would be afraid to be rejected. But approaching him as a stranger, you know, he has an even playing field. He's not bringing the baggage of what he's done. It allows him to be a regular person in that being anonymous, you know, and having that interaction. I love that scene. Actually, my father did that with me when I was young, taught me how to draw. And he would tell me things like that, you know, look, it's like learning to write. It's just something you can learn. And I remember having a conversation like that, being like, no, you have to be born with it, you know, but the idea that just telling Jimmy or making him feel that you're capable of more than what you think you are, I think is what he's being able to be a father. That's what a father's role usually is in the best sense, right?
Nailed it. That's exactly what I saw in this scene. Jimmy, who thinks being street smart is a plus, but he's actually hiding a bit of insecurity, which for him comes to the fact that he grew up without a father. But the learning how to draw, that, like you just said, that gave Jimmy a sense of accomplishment and it gave him value that he didn't even really know he even had.
Yeah, in an ordinary thing that, you know, could just happen. And it was challenging actually to do that. It's like, I remember when Luke and I were talking, we're like, well, we have to draw, you know, we know what the scene is. And we're like, and I remember Luke was like, am I going to, you know, it's going to take a long time to draw this thing, you know? And we're like, I was like, yeah, you know, so we're just struggling with, you know, making it feel believable enough that enough time had gone, you know, in the edit and having enough material, you know, so it didn't fall apart, but also moving the film along. You can't sit there all day and draw. You're feeling like,
And that's another thing that I loved about 5 Pounds of Pressure. This film is an hour 50 minutes long, but there is not one moment that is slow. You're paying attention. You're moving the story along. Literally, it's just everything is, all the scenes are perfect timing. How did you manage to intersect multiple storylines with different characters without actually blurring those storylines?
You know, I think you know, in the script, I mean, I came up as an editor, so I think, and maybe my background as a musician kind of helped with pacing and timing. I like to think, you know, but I did really think of it on paper, was really paying attention to a certain pacing in the editing. Now, when you write like that, doesn't mean it will make it to the screen. You know, you sometimes you have all sorts of things you're writing that you're like, oh, this would be great if, you know, but there was a certain pacing I was thinking that I just wanted to subtly feel like everything was picking up momentum, like, you know, these two different trains are about to crash into each other, you know, and I wanted to kind of have that feeling of momentum and tension throughout the film. So the way of connecting those stories helps that, you know, you're not only telling this part of the story and then jumping away as a palate cleanser at near the end, you're actually building into each other because they start to become one story instead of being separate stories, you know? So I really liked that structure as a writer and was really hoping it would work.
It worked well because I liked the fact that the intersection of these stories, they didn't come quickly. You allowed each storyline to build before they crossed. And when they did cross, the timing was perfect.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, it's funny, you know, you think about it, you know, like building a house or your architecture. But again, it's the emotional side that, you know, you're hoping and you're working on and you hope it's there, but it's kind of like you're almost trusting like a faith. You have to have like a bunch of faith in all of the work that you're doing. You hope it winds up on the screen. And I mean, I think we were blessed by this amazing cast. You know, a film is only as good as your team and the filmmakers, but your cast is, you know, they're the ones out there playing it. I always joke, like as a director, you know, you're a coach on the sideline. You're not playing the game. They're out there with the ball playing the game. You know, they're in front of the camera. They're making the play, so to speak. So, you know, when we got Luke Evans, we started with Luke Evans. He was the first one who attached. And that was so thrilling because that allowed us to, you know, okay, now this sets the tone for the kind of film it can be. Because what he's capable of allows the film to kind of reach that, I think, or at least aspire to that. And then, you know, having Alex Pettifer and Rory Culkin, I love Rory. I saw Rory in a bunch of his films. One in particular was Lords of Chaos. He brought such empathy to characters that on paper, you know, I don't know if I would want to watch a movie, you know? And I felt like Mike had that kind of challenge, right? On paper, do you want to watch someone who's making these mistakes and why am I interested in it? And I felt like Rory really brings that. Not only did he bring that empathy to the character, but I also felt how uncomfortable he was in this world and not find, like you talked about identity, not having a place here. And, you know, him building up, you know, because when you start out here where I want the characters to go becomes an extreme place. How do I make that believable, make us go from the ordinary to the extraordinary with these ordinary people. So I kind of felt, you know, having him and what his intangible, brilliant talent brings, and Alex and Luke, you know, these are actors, and Stephanie and Savannah, who played Laurie. I mean, they just brought so much richness. You know, we had all these conversations. Instead of rehearsals, we would just talk and talk about what's going on, you know, how Donna's, you know, what's the real motivation behind a scene. And a lot of, for Donna, it's fear for her son, to protect her son. It's not so much anger, even though it may look as anger sometimes, but it's here's this guy coming in, and if she lets out the information to her son that his father's a murderer and was in jail, what does that do to his psyche? Does he romanticize it? Does he think he's flawed because of it? You know, because you can never, she can't fix that part of the story, but she can hide it, you know? So all these things were really fun to play with the actors.
And see, and that's what I loved about, and Stephanie's character, Donna. When people, ladies and gentlemen, when you watch this film, you have got to watch the character Donna, because she brings some very profound dialogue in this film. And when she talked as the film was moving along, and I noticed, and she really brings up these points, like, you know, when someone goes to prison for a crime, especially if it's murder, those on the outside, they still remember, but she brought up the point, I lived those years too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when she said that, I was like, I kept thinking of all of the people who have someone they know or a relative that's in prison. And I'm thinking, wow, they're living the same sentence, but outside the walls of a prison. Her dialogue, you couldn't have written a better script for her.
Oh, thanks. That's so, especially for a woman, that makes me feel great. Because, you know, those are, as a man, it's always challenging, you know, when you're writing for a woman. But I try not to think, oh, I'm writing for a woman or a man. I just write, you know, I try to put myself in those shoes, you know. And I.
Yeah, well, she brought it forth. And boy, Adam got the message.
She crushed it. I loved her, you know, when, you know, and of course, as a director, you don't know what your actors are going to do when it comes time to, you know, even if you rehearse it, you rehearse it at a certain level. But when it comes time to shoot those scenes, and this is the best part for my job, you know, I'm an audience member too, you know? So when I saw that performance, you know, when she's confronting him and the emotion and the power of that, and I'm in the room with them, you know, it's palpable. It's real, you know, and that there's a moment there when he leaves and she breaks down. I wish I could just show you the whole take of that, because she broke down. It was a long time, you know, and we just kept going, you know, you're just rolling. And I remember I could just watch that uncut whole performance and the length of it, you know, obviously in a movie, you got to move it along, right? But when you're watching it in the room, it became its own thing, you know, and there was so much power to what she brought. And those words are nice on paper, but without an actor bringing it to life and bringing it the heart and the emotion and the reality to it, you know, they're meaningless, right?
this film made me want to see more of Stephanie in other films. Makes me want to see Rory Culkin in more work. His character, Mike, oh my gosh, I loved his character. He nailed the persona. The wardrobe was perfect for him.
That's great. Thanks. That's great to hear. Yeah. You know, I don't know. You know, it's funny. When I was writing it, I always had the cowboy hat and the whole thing. And I think it was after we finished doing the film, and one late night you're watching movies and Midnight Cowboy came on. I'm like, oh, that's probably where it was lurking around in the back of my psyche. You know, this kind of, you know, out of place character who is in the city, you know. And the naivete of him, you know, and I really loved, you know, Rory and I had a lot of fun, you know, putting Mike through hell.
You know, so. Well, there is a hidden talent in this movie. And I even had to go on IMDb to look him up. And this kid is one experienced actor, and that is Rudy Pankow.
Yes.
Yeah, my gosh, where did you find him?
Well, I mean, he was already, you know, a star in Outer Banks. And, you know, it's funny when we had Luke and I had Stephanie, and you're trying to find the right Jimmy, because he also has to somehow, you have to believe that they're a family. So you have that challenge too. We went after Rudy, and to Rudy's credit, one thing I loved about him, when we would meet on calls and talk, before he would agree to do the film, he had to know everything about what Jimmy was doing, why he did it, and the arc and the emotional arc of the film. He kept dissecting it, and we'd have a call, and then we'd set up another call and another call. And I forget how many there were, but you know, this is before he agreed to do the film. And I said so much respect for him, because I really got like, wow, he won't do this unless he really feels he can do it right. You know, and it was, you know, And once we got to set, he was, you know, because you don't know what that's an indication of. It's like, oh, is this going to be, we're going to be difficult to work with, right? Because you're putting all this work in and we haven't even agreed to do the film. And he was amazing. He was like, once he got it, he came to set. He was Jimmy, you know? So, but he wouldn't take on the film until he did all the work. So here's a guy who did all the work before he even agreed to do it, you know, which is amazing.
Rudy Pankow, to me, and this is only an opinion, he literally could be the next River Phoenix. He could be the next Heath Ledger.
I agree with you. I think he has something that the camera loves, right? His acting, his nuances. And you know, there's one thing that it struck me, and you know, I'm a fan, so what, and I can't help it. Right? But, you know, but the scene with him and Donna, when he comes home late at night, and it's a great, I loved their acting in that scene. It's, I could have edited, you know, 10 different ways. It still would have been that scene because the acting was so strong in every take. And the way he delivered the dialogue, because there was a challenge in that dialogue, because we're about to hear something in a way, you know, we've heard some things like this before, but the way he lets it hit him, the way he questions her, it just seems so, it just feels like he's making up the lines. It you know, even to me as the writer, it feels like it's ad-libbed, and it's not. He's delivering, and so is Stephanie, but it was just amazing to see these two actors, you know, really just it really come to life like that. You know,
Rudy, I don't know,
that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Rudy's going to be an actor's actor.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But I've got to hand it to you, Phil. Every single character that you cast, you couldn't have done any better. It was perfect casting.
Thanks. I was thinking when you know, when I was looking at auditions, I remember with Lorraine, who plays Jamal, and you know, and I love the idea of having this woman being this, you know, wise drug dealer, you know, like
she was a little scary.
Yes, but she, like, I love how she did things in the audition tape that I thought was so great. I was just like, I don't want to like change anything. And even her gold tooth, she has a gold tooth. I was like, you know, what was like, do you have it? She was like, oh, that was tinfoil. I just put that in for the audition, you know? And just her eyes and how she was like, even in her audition when, you know, she did her audition tape, there was no one there, but she was clocking, you know, what they're doing. She's reading them. She's quickly figuring out how she's going to take advantage of however she could take advantage of the situation. And I just loved, and the way she played with the friendly, the character always had a friendly persona, right? I think when I wrote it, I was pictured it being just total, like, one-dimensional friendly. Like, you don't even see the dark side. I love that she wasn't afraid to, you know, lay into, you know, you could feel the dark side of her. I just loved how she did it.
I am not. One thing I try to do, I am not going to give any spoilers away here. But her interaction when Mike comes in by himself the second time. Yeah, oh my gosh. I either wanted to punch her or figure out a way to save Mike, because and it's like you said, it's the credit to the actors here, because every scene there, the audience is going to feel the tension, the emotion, you know, what is the action going to be of this character? I mean, I loved 5 Pounds of Pressure, but there is a part of this film that I don't think I've ever seen anybody do. I don't think anybody could ever recreate the magic that you did when you orchestrated the ending sequences because they were extremely creative. It made this film stand out big time. I mean, what was your thought process? Because when the climax hits, but then you went past it, because a lot of time in a lot of gritty films, when that climax happens, it's probably about a minute or two and then we're going to see credits roll. But you took it to another level, and this ending sequence was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. You know, I love films that take you to, I mean, look, one of my favorite films is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right? Where you have multiple endings, right? And you have this really dark ending with, you know, Jack Nicholson's character, right? And what we find out happens to him. I don't think I have to worry about spoilers on an old film, but you know, with the, what they've cut his brain out, right? He gets a lobotomy, and then you have the Indian who then has to seize that and then releases him. So you have another ending, right? That's, you know, cause that it's enough to find out what happened to his character, but then you have that other ending. He lets him go. Then you have the ending where he takes that sink and throws it through the wall, you know, based on a joke when Jack Nicholson's character is telling him to do that. And he runs out of the place and everyone's cheering. And it, the emotion of it is like you just won the Super Bowl or something, right? I mean, the emotion of that after we just seen the darkest things was so uplifting and beautiful. So I love when a film can take me further and further and further. And I think when I was writing this, it, you know, there, it felt, I knew I wanted to do the end just to music. And Felipe Jacob did the score. Beautiful. We had that. I was trying to find like the score in the film. And then he did a beautiful score. And then I also had that song, the very end song, the song called Too Much by Dan Davis. And I had that for years in my head. I had that song and I had the idea of how it was going to go together. And I had written it and I knew I just wanted that to just play out. And when we first finished, I ran into the day or two after we finished shooting the film, I went into the assistant editor, Owen Tooth, who's a director himself. He was putting it together. And I said, we just got to put together that end sequence. I just have to see it with the music. I've been waiting for this moment for so long. And I put it together and I was so emotional myself because I waited so long to see if it would work. I didn't even have all the footage in yet. I only had some of the pieces, but I needed to see how it would feel. And I was, you know, I felt like, oh, I think it's going to knock on wood. I think it might.
Oh my gosh, Phil. I can still picture the sequence because after the climax and then there was, I think there's a couple of scenes and then there's the sequence with the music bed. And the music, the song choice was so perfect. I actually played the ending back because I was like, oh my gosh, it just gets better. And what it was cinematic art because here's what I loved about this film. So the whole film, You're putting in all of these different emotions. The audience is feeling everything of every character. But then you have this sequence. And by using the music, we felt each character's emotion. And I don't even want to describe the emotion because I don't want to give it away. And you're hearing the music. You're watching the actors. And without hearing them, you feel what they're feeling. And I man, if they gave away an Oscar for an ending, you'd win it.
That's amazing to say that. Thank you so much. But I love endings. Like endings are like, you know, I grew up with Twilight Zone and, you know, and as a kid, I remember loving Planet of the Apes, you know, with the big twist. I love endings that make the ride not only kind of worthwhile, but also bring me to a place where either it gives me a paradigm shift of some sort, or it makes me really feel like I've gotten a bigger picture of the whole thing, you know, brings me to another level to look down, and also makes me walk away feeling something and talking and wanting to talk about it or wanting to question it. Those are the films I love, you know. I mean, look, I enjoy a film if it's a great film, but the ending is not, you know, but my hope is always to like have that ending really build to that, you know, always have the ending take you to another place. So, and I feel like that even up to that last shot, you know, I wanted the last shot even to give you, you know, context for the whole thing. So that last shot was always such an important one for me, and whatever metaphors anyone wants to draw from it. But I loved, you know, planning towards that.
Well, you raise the bar when it comes to endings. And, you know, when I look at films, I'm like, oh, you know, I could see a little bit of Kubrick there. You could see a little bit of Scorsese or Coppola. Your film? No, this is all Phil Alaco from beginning to end. You copied no one. And this is 5 pounds of pressure. Oh my God. I have a feeling it could end up being my favorite film of the year because this is art. And if anybody goes in to see your film with a preconceived idea, they will completely lose that idea when they see this film, because this is an original from beginning to end. It is stellar, but not only did you write and direct, you wrote some of the soundtrack.
There were some old songs. I used to have a music career, so I had some old songs, and, you know, you're trying to plug in some places, and, you know, and I was like, it's kind of like fun to have a piece of music you can throw in the bar and, you know, throw in a piece. And a lot of the music are people I know, and I love their music. Matt Vanderwolf, Max Vanderwolf does like 5 songs in the film. And the credit bed is a song of his that I love. I remember he showed me one of his. I was like, I got to put that in the film. So it's also a chance to, you know, share some music that you love and that you also feel is in context with the film. Now I always feel like I'm searching for the right pieces of music.
Well, you know, I have to ask,
you know?
Yeah. Well, Phil, I've got to ask because I waited till the very end credits on this film just so I could see all of the music that was in the film. And then I got to thinking, would you ever come out with a limited edition soundtrack for this film? Because the songs are great.
Oh, thanks. And you know, everyone who music, I know almost all of their music, and I think it would. I love the music in the film. I love it, and it was kind of fun too because we have certain times where, you know, we have music in the bar, but we also have a score going on. We have, you know, we have all these things kind of layered in, and it was kind of fun to do that because, you know, a bar, you can't just get rid of the music. You want to kind of play with it, so it was kind of sonically a fun thing to kind of play the dissonance of that as we got towards the end. And we have this kind of funeral march kind of feel, kind of building up the tension of several scenes, you know? So that was kind of fun to play with that and hope it didn't, you know, just make noise.
No, not at all. It added to the film. And where can everyone see your film? Because I want everyone to see this film.
That's awesome. Well, it's in theaters and also wherever you go to watch movies on demand and streaming. So go to wherever you get your movies from and find 5 pounds of pressure and hopefully you'll like it. Fingers crossed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you this. You have got to see 5 pounds of pressure. From the storyline, the writing, the directing, the acting, the music. This is a 5-star movie across the board. And I truly mean that because I've seen so many films and there are films I've seen that I felt like I was going to, well, stab myself in the eye. but this film is worth that hour 50 minutes to sit there, kick back, enjoy the story. But I will tell you this, You're going to be living the story with each and every single character in this film. And after it's over, you're going to go, wow, I was not expecting that. But you too will end up giving this film 5 stars. 5 pounds of pressure's in the theaters right now. And also, as Phil said, it's available on streaming. So look it up. 5 pounds of pressure starring Luke Evans, Alex Pettifer. Oh my gosh, there's so many amazing actors in this film. They cast this thing perfectly. And Phil, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your great film. I can't wait to see what you come up with next. And whatever you do, you got to come back.
I would love to. And thank you so much. It's such a thrill talking with you. And I'm so glad you liked it. This made my whole month.
Well, you are very welcome. And again, you are a brilliant filmmaker. You have the eye for storytelling. And ladies and gentlemen, you're going to fall in love with 5 pounds of pressure. Again, it's in theaters right now, also on streaming. And hey, you can catch all of the replays of our interviews with top film directors like Phil Allocco, as well as producers, screenwriters, and actors, and more on our website, bondoncinema.com. We're also available on YouTube and a dozen audio platforms as well. So I want to thank you for watching and listening. And as for me, you'll either see me at the movies or possibly from the red carpet.
When I was a kid, we had to write about our favorite heroes. And this one kid, he wrote about his father. And that always stuck with me.
There's nothing special about wanting to be special. It's the most ordinary thing in the world.
I'm Adam. Did 13 years time. Today's my last day. Got a new place. Got a new job. But the really big news, I met my son. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you.
You recognize him? He used to run these streets.
I feel I got like a second chance.
Y'all want to get some of that?
Fuck it. I know I got a second chance.
Go take care of him. Show him who's boss.
I can't keep running.
So you really want to do this?
Yeah.
5 pounds of trigger pressure. It's your aim, never off.
I can't change what I did. I know who I am. I know who I can be. And I know I can still do something good.